So we are, of course, chatting about Australia's social media ban for under 16-year-olds, which comes into effect tomorrow. You just heard from the eSafety Commissioner on how things will work. And if you didn't catch that whole chat, it will be on the ABC Listen app later this morning. Although a lot of parents are supportive of this move, as we just heard Julie Inman-Grant say before, doesn't mean it's going to be an easy transition. There's going to be a major adjustment for families, a lot to navigate, and it's going to affect all internet users for reasons that you will hear in a moment. But I do want to hear from you. If you're already navigating that move away from social media as a parent, I'd love to know how you're doing it. With me is Professor Alina Morovska from the Parenting and Family Support Centre at University of Queensland School of Psychology, and Cam Wilson, tech reporter at Crikey. Alina, I might start with you. Knowing teenagers and how they work, what's your impression of this new rule? How do you see it working?
Yeah, good morning, and delighted to be here. I think it's going to be a really interesting experiment, and certainly kids are very creative, and I'm sure they'll find lots of different ways to subvert the system, but also to perhaps come up with new ways of interacting and engaging. So I'm sure there are adolescents out there who are feeling a lot of angst about what's going to happen and what the changes will mean for them, but there's probably also many who are thinking and being creative and innovative as well.
Experiment, innovative. It sounds very like, it sounds a little bit like spin, I feel like, with some of the conversations we're having here. But I guess it's a bit early for people to sort of know what to expect, Alina.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I say, you know, kids are trying to figure out ways around it, that's what I mean by experimental. I was hearing from some of my own kids about what's happening out there in the world, and, you know, from VPNs as being one of the popular options to putting on appropriate levels of makeup for the girls to subvert the facial recognition. How effective that is, that's not my area of expertise. But these are the sorts of conversations kids are having, and so therefore, that's translating into the kinds of conversations that parents are having with their kids about what that means.
So, Cam, in your role as a tech reporter for Crikey, you've been following what kids have been doing. You've been talking to them about it. What kind of things are you hearing?
So we're seeing that kids are very eager to get around the ban. There was actually a listener or watcher survey of ABC's BTN show, which is the news show for kids. Mm-hmm. We spoke to 17,000 kids, and I think 75% of them said that they were planning on getting around the ban in some way or another. We do know as well that, you know, a third of parents told a survey for the government that they're actually also planning on helping their kids get around it. So clearly there is some desire, some significant desire from the community to get around it. I do think that there is a question about how easy that will be to get around it. We are hearing, of course, about things like VPNs, things about kids wearing makeup or scrunching up their face to kind of, I think, simulate wrinkles and other things to get around the ban. And look, you know, it's kind of hard from just hearing anecdotal evidence to know how widespread it is. The thing that I would say is I think that, like, you know, there are a lot of methods to get around it. Some involve fooling technology systems. Some involve just going to alternative platforms, which I think is kind of very hard to stop. But, you know, with some of these tech systems that the platforms are relying on, I think fooling them might be a little bit harder sometimes than what people might expect. For example, you know, if you use a VPN, which people might not be familiar with, but the kind of basic understanding of it is it's a piece of software that allows you to pretend like you are somewhere else. And so it might say, you know, all of a sudden I might switch it on and I go from, you know, my computer says I'm in Australia, now I'm in Paraguay or something. But platforms can use a whole range of signals, including, well, like, where have you been in the past? What time are you logging on? Even the things that you're posting when you're like, you know, hey, just gone down to Bondi, to figure out roughly where you are. So, you know, it is a little bit more complex than just simply, you know, switching on a VPN or even, you know, tricking the systems once, because, you know, the eSafety Commissioner was on before has told the platforms you've got to keep on evaluating these. They don't just get past the gate once and then they're in. But yes, there's clearly a lot of desire to get around it.
And the onus is on the platforms to be policing that, to be keeping the kids out.
Yeah, that's right. So it's on the platforms. They need to take what's called reasonable steps. And that is, there's some information about that, but that's largely left up to the platforms. And my understanding is it's going to be a kind of constant negotiation in response to how things are going. But yes, like children, parents, anyone who wants to get around it, there's no actual consequences for them to do so.
So Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young and others I've heard have voiced concerns that kids are going to end up in other online spaces that are, well, in her words, darker and more dangerous. How likely do you think that is?
So there's two ways in which that'll happen. The first way is that they go to alternative platforms, you know, the ones that have been coming up like CoverStar, Yopu, Emanate. You probably haven't heard of them. That's probably the point. Like these are places that, you know, aren't as well established. And in many of those cases, they are not big companies. You know, Yopu, for example, doesn't even have any information on its platform about what it actually does just generally to keep its users safe. So, you know, it's pretty safe to assume that these other platforms with less scrutiny, with less users and resources, are probably doing less to keep users safe, and there is concern about that. And the other concern is that, you know, I know these platforms have a pretty bad reputation for you know, failing to keep children safe online on their platforms for many years. Over the last few years, they kind of have implemented some features. You know, they do recognize who are they try to recognize who are teens, and then show them slightly different, more limited experiences online. You know, for example, some of them, you know, if you're 13 and you're on Instagram, would you still allow to? An adult can't actually message you directly, things like that. But if you're a teen who fools Instagram somehow into staying on your platform, you're going to now get that full adult experience without those protections. So, you know, there is that, you know, even if you stay in the major platforms, but convince them you're an adult, you're no longer getting these online safety features for kids that they've developed.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Cam Wilson, who's a tech reporter at Crikey, and Professor Alina Morovska, who is a parenting and family researcher at the University of Queensland, about how to navigate what's going to come after tomorrow when the social media ban for under 16s comes into place. I'm asking you about your questions, your thoughts on the ban. Rodney says most people forget that the most valuable personal possession is your privacy. To hand your private life to multinational corporations is to become the product. Will the more isolated young teens still be able to use Zoom or the Google equivalent to keep connected to their friends is a question that one person's saying. Zoom is not part of the ban as far as I know. Alina, one of the big drivers for the ban was concerns about youth mental health. How likely is it that social media, restricting social media, is going to help with youth mental health as far as you know?
Look, so there is some data suggesting that social media or excessive social media use or excessive screen use is associated with, you know, lower mental health or difficulties with mental health. So I guess at a population level, at a public health level, if we have fewer kids on average engaging in excessive use, then that should make a difference to youth mental health. But that's at a population level. If you are looking at your own child, are you going to see much of a difference there? Perhaps not. It's a very, very individual, thing.
Has it become a bit of a scapegoat for things like body image issues or mental health? Are we sort of hoping that this is going to be a silver bullet to fix all teen mental health here?
I think there is a little bit of that sense that it's the silver bullet. And I think it's one of the many things in our society that are contributing to difficulties with youth mental health. So I don't think this is going to fix everything, but it's certainly one part of the conversation. And I think that's the important thing, that we've really opened up a conversation and that we hopefully this conversation will keep going, because that issue of kids finding new platforms that perhaps are less safe or looking for options, it's natural at that age to be testing boundaries, to be testing rules, to be building your independence. So we should expect this. We'd be very surprised if adolescents weren't doing this. But having that ongoing conversation with young people and checking in with them is probably the most important thing that parents and educators can do to support their mental health.
Cam, I'm thinking about all the different people that I've spoken to over the course of this year around this ban, and what I've sort of felt like has been the split is that parents love it and experts hate it. What do you think is going on there?
Yeah, it's It's actually a good question. Actually, funnily enough, though, I actually think that parents, and based on some polling I saw yesterday, are actually slightly less supportive of it than the general population. And in fact, there was this weird thing where I noticed that people generally were more supportive of it for other people other than their kids. So interesting kind of dynamic to all of that. But, you know, like there are very clearly a lot of parents who are very concerned about kids and technology. And like, you know, we all went through the pandemic. We were all stuck inside. Everything went online. And I think a lot of people felt uncomfortable about that. A lot of people have seen how their kids are using technology and don't feel very good about that. I think the difference is between kids between parents and the academics is that, you know, like parents always have the kind of anecdotal experience, and you know, that very often it's kind of from their perspective. One thing actually, I'll maybe rather than suggesting you know, saying to myself, I'll say that one thing that kids said in a study about this is that sometimes they feel like parents don't really approach their social media use with a lot of nuance, that they only see the downsides, how it bad for them, but they don't really acknowledge and understand, you know, how they use the technology, what benefits they get out of it, and what they're losing. And I think, you know, researchers who probably, you know, don't have the emotional attachment always of coming to kids with this, with their own, you know, emotional, like real connection to that versus the kind of like, you know, trying to speak to all of them, yada, yada, yada. Like they maybe get a little bit more of that or for whatever reason, you know, get that point of view. So I do like totally understandable. Academics, I think, are a lot more cautious. You know, they're trying to look at these incredibly complex systems and you know, trying to understand how everything is affecting kids, including technology. So they're definitely kind of slower to make these conclusions. And who knows, maybe in a few years, will have more strong evidence and that'll show that this ban was overall, you know, more good than harm. But, you know, at the moment, I would say that most of the academics who really study this, who are experts in this, say they are kind of worried that we don't have really strong evidence supporting that just getting rid of this will have an overall benefit versus, say, not the alternative, which is like doing nothing, but other regulatory efforts that might, for example, blunt some of the harmful features of social media while keeping access to some of the good parts of it.
I do want to put that to Alina in just a tick. But first, Cam, I think one of the criticisms of the ban has been that instead of blocking kids off social media because they're not safe for kids, which is the argument, we should have made a safer internet for everyone. For all of us as internet users, how is the mood going to shift on these spaces if they are meant to be effectively adult-only spaces now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, like one of the criticisms of this law is that it is kind of just focused on kids rather than these harmful features that everyone has. But, you know, that we're kind of mostly worried about when it comes to kids. And we kind of acknowledge that kids have a little bit, you know, honestly, like, you know, fewer freedoms because of the restrictions that we place on them to keep them safe. And so, you know, there's in all areas of policy, there's always this debate over the difference between what we do for kids and what we do for adults. I think that, you know, for example, there's this campaign that's come up recently from the group Teach Us Consent, which is called Fix Our Feed, which says we want to make it so that, you know, algorithmic feeds, you know, those kinds of things that serve you videos based on recommendations and that kind of stuff, will actually opt out of that for people and you've got to opt into it. So this idea of, can we change some of the features in these apps rather than just saying, no matter what you do, we think they're harmful and get rid of them. So, you know, there are kind of different approaches and maybe there is, you know, there have been other regulatory efforts that are doing this as well. But obviously this ban has come in, it's taken up all this conversation and oxygen, and that's what we're focusing on. And I think the fear is that, you know, when this is done, people will think that this is problem solved. I think kind of everyone agrees who's really paying attention to this that, you know, this is an ongoing issue. You know, even if the ban is, it works really well, it'll probably need tweaking. So I hope that people kind of keep paying attention to this.
On ABC Radio National, this is Life Matters. I'm Tegan Taylor with Cam Wilson and Professor Alina Morovska talking about the social media ban that's coming into effect tomorrow for under 18s. I did make a comment before that I feel like most parents that I speak to are fans of the ban. One person says, I'm a parent, I'm not a fan of the ban. Robin in Avalon Beach says, I think adults should be reminded that helping a young person get around the social media restrictions means assuming responsibility for that person's online safety. Well, Alina, we heard Cam say before that experts were not sure there was enough data on the mental health benefit of banning social media. I know that's not the core of your research area, but from what you know of the research, what's your take there?
Yeah, look, as I said before, I think the research is still emerging on this, but there is increasing data showing that social media does have that negative effect on young people. Now, as I said before, that's at a population level. If you look at any individual child, and this is the difference between the anecdote, you know, the person you've heard about, the person you know, your own kids, versus the population of all children or all adolescents in the community. So when we look at that population level, it does certainly seem that excessive social media use, and particularly certain, you know, more risky types of social media use, do result in more difficulties with mental or more mental health problems. So I think if we think about this as a population health approach, in the same way that we protect kids and have rules around, say, driving, you know, we don't allow kids to start driving, and we until they reach a particular age, we do the same things with alcohol. We do the same sorts of things with many other things, which is not to say that you couldn't have a younger child driving mm-hmm. if they've got the skills, but we decide as a society that this is not something that's appropriate, and we want to protect kids from it. And I think this is the way with the social media ban that's coming into force as well. But to me, I think the critical thing is, like driving, if we say, well, we'll just put the ban in and that's it, mm-hmm. That's problem solved, that doesn't address the skills issue. That child that needs to learn to drive has a whole program and a whole process in place to help them learn how to drive safely and be a safe member of the driving community. Well, I think we need to really be doing that as well with the social media and broader online space as well, helping kids and parents navigate how to learn the skills to do that safely in a healthy way.
How do we do that? What kind of programs need to sit around this ban so that when kids are 16 and the gates open, that they're able to navigate that safely?
So I think we need probably multiple layers of things over time. So it's not something that should happen, you know, when they're 15 and a half. It needs to be happening right through their education, where kids are learning skills to navigate that through the education system. But we also need to have systems and programs in place for parents, such as the Triple P Positive Parenting Program, which has just released a module for parents on navigating screen use, that really helps parents and kids to have those conversations and to build those skills in children as to how to do that well.
As a parent, if your kid's waking up tomorrow morning and be like, Mom, my social media is gone and I'm sad about it, like, what kind of conversations can parents be having around the country today, tomorrow, in a month's time to help kids navigate this?
Look, I think the most important thing is to acknowledge that for some kids this is a really big deal. So while for the parent or the adult it might feel like, oh, well, you know, what's the big deal here? For some adolescents this is a huge deal. And so acknowledging those emotions and acknowledging those feelings as a starting point is really important. And then helping them navigate, well, what happens next? You know, if the issue is, you know, trying to understand where the problem lies. So is it about missed connections with peers or opportunities for connection with others? If that's the issue, well, then what do you need to do to replace that? How do you build up new ways of engaging and communicating with your friends to replace what you might have had in social media spaces beforehand?
Alina, Cam, thank you both so much for joining me today. Professor Alina Morovska is with the Parenting and Family Support Centre at UQ's School of Psychology. Cam Wilson is tech reporter at Crikey. And thank you for your texts as well. One person says, Roblox thinks my 14-year-old daughter is 18 and we can't seem to change it. We need a photo ID, but she needs to be 16 to get an ID. That's a real Gordian knot you've got yourself in there. Another says banning phones from schools does so much more than the social media ban. Another says sometimes parenting means saying no to your kids. Social media and excessive, the text says screen time, which I think is telling, are hurting our children. Strongly in favour of the ban. This person signs off, mother of four under 10. Thoughts and prayers to you, ma'am. Another says the 10 and 11-year-old boys next door have been riding their bikes a lot around the park opposite us. Their grandmother told me that since they were booted off TikTok, they spend all their time outside. Sometimes, she said, she would find them scrolling TikTok at 3 a.m. So I think the media ban is pretty good for 11-year-old boys. Well, coming up next here on Life Matters on ABC Radio National, it is nearly holiday time, I hope, for you. How do you manage when you have different expectations than your travelling buddies?
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.